What is up, everybody? I am not only your truth archaeologist, but I am one of your hosts. You can call me Velo.
And I'm Nicole, your research paleontologist.
And this is Matrix Assassins Podcast. Welcome to another episode. This one is a very special episode because we had one of our listeners, Rick Plautz, reach out to us a few months ago and had a great idea to come onto the podcast to talk about Web 3.0. And all of the emerging trends that Web 3.0 have to offer. And I really like this episode because it's super conversational. We talk about the boomers, we talk about the zoomers, and we talk about the progression of what we've seen throughout our lives going from dial-up all the way to connecting our wallets to cryptocurrency.
Yeah, I also really liked how it was more of an unstructured interview and we got a chance to talk about the current events. We talked about like how, you know, it seems like these days everyone is like a self-described expert on all topics. And it was just a really fascinating conversation, just kind of recapping, like Vila was saying, how things have progressed in this time frame.
Yes, I totally agree. So before we press play, just a couple of housekeeping items. If you want to go ahead and check out our merch, we're on www.matrixassassins.com. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and leave a 5-star review on Apple and Spotify. And if you can do it anywhere else, in your hearts, in your minds, in your souls, go ahead and do that as well. And last but not least, we launched our Patreon channel. So right now we are doing one bonus episode. It's a full 1.5 to 2 hour episode that's just a Patreon exclusive. And we have all of our video formats of our interviews of the podcast on our Patreon. So go ahead and check out our Patreon channel. I believe it's just called Matrix Assassins.
And before we press play, this episode is brought to you by Blue Shield. Blue Shield is a leader in the EMF protection industry, and they have a variety of different devices that you can choose from. They have home devices, which cover an entire home or office space, devices for your car if you're traveling a lot or have a job that requires a lot of commute time, and also personal devices that you can take with you if you're just doing quick trips to the store or staying overnight in a hotel. So if you would like, you can find the link in our EMF protection highlights on both of our Instagram accounts or also on our website at www.matrixassassins.com under the sponsors tab. And you'll find the link to Blue Shield there with our code MATRIX, which will give you 10% off at checkout.
And with that said, Nicole, are you ready to exit the simulation?
I am.
Let's go.
We have temperatures right now in the 60s.
This bag right here.
You don't have to.
Welcome
to
Matrix Assassins.
Two real girls in a simulated world.
Welcome to another episode of Matrix Assassins. Tonight is a very special episode. We are joined by the one and only Rick Plautz. He is here today. We are going to talk about Web 3.0, baby. Rick, how are you doing today?
Fantastic. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're so very welcome. So just a little bit of backstory. Rick reached out, I would say like a couple weeks ago and wanted to be a guest on the podcast. And there are people that like reach out and sometimes it's a fit and sometimes it's not a fit. And when I read what you wrote and what you wanted to talk about today, I was like, this is a full body fuck yes. And we're really excited to have you on.
Thank you so much. Oh my God. I'm a huge fan. So I love what you provide. I think it's a very special place on the internet. So thank you.
Thank you. We love like our little corner. Our little corner of the Matrix.
Ever evolving.
I know, right? No, the big, the ESETI stuff was a big deal for me. I hadn't heard about that before until you'd had him on, so.
What kind of resonated with you with that episode?
Just the like, you know, no bullshit alien stuff, finally.
Mm.
You know,
right.
Like, I'm so done with this, like, are they here? Are they real? It's like, yeah, no shit, okay? And here's how you do it. And by the way, we're also aliens and we're here to save ourselves. You know, like everyone's like, aliens are going to save us. And it's like, yeah, we're the aliens. Mm-hmm. Okay. You're going to figure this out.
Yeah.
I really appreciated that.
Yeah, that is like a very honest conversation. And we were also talking about like, yeah, Bigfoot exists. I feed him all the time. Like, this is just a normal.
Yeah, I was very matter of fact. Like, this is just a normal day. This is a Tuesday.
I know. And I just, yeah, I mean, it's nice to, it's unfortunate, like, the stuff that he talks about as far as like the people that we look at as kind of like UFO experts or ufologists in the world that get interviews on TV shows and things like that. And a lot of them are kind of full of shit, at least according to him. And that's unfortunate, you know, and it is like, you think there's some kind of, there is something out there. And then all the people that tell us that there is, and there's all this, you know, intrigue and mystery, but they're also full of shit. And it's just kind of like, fuck, again, you know?
I think it's hilarious that he, you know, like some of them would come to visit and they would have like no expectation. They would think that like they wouldn't really experience anything. And then they walk away like completely mind blown.
I love that. Well, I love the idea that you have to be in a good, positive mindset. That's actually like kind of the key, it seems like, was really cool. You know, you have to think good thoughts and be kind of pure when you show up and I don't know. I just think that was great. Anyway, that's why I listened to you both for a long time.
That's awesome. So I guess for the listeners who don't know you yet, do you want to just give like a quick background about, you know, like just what your professional experience is like, what you've been working on, and then like some of the topics that we'll eventually touch on.
If you were to have a social credit score, like what would
it be? 0 to 100. Yeah.
Hopefully it would be like my credit score, you know, like 500. You know what I mean? No. Okay. So my name is Rick Plautz. I'm just a nerd. I fell down the Web3 rabbit hole in November. I teach motion design and 3D animation at a advertising school in Richmond called the Brand Center. And I've done motion design and 3D work for 10 years. I guess the digital world for me is a big deal. Like that's kind of where I live, you know, and making 3D and animations and things like that. And I always worked in video and film forever. And yeah, I mean, as I started this, you know, I made fun of Web3 and crypto for a long time. And then I finally watched a couple of videos and like just really, really went down the rabbit hole. And the thing was like, once I did that, it's just completely opened my brain. Like I felt like I opened my head up and then just stuff just dumped into it, you know? And, I remember the last time that happened was around like the Mayan calendar in 2012. And it was interesting. Like I went down that rabbit hole, which led me down to like 9/11, the JFK, like the OG conspiracy theories before all the algorithms got worked out on YouTube. And I realized I went down, like, I don't know, I feel lucky in a sense now because the algorithms weren't as fine tuned. So I was still getting the dopamine hits of having my viewpoint reinforced by some random dude on YouTube. But it wasn't like weaponized to the point that it is now. But no, I mean, like, anyway, I felt very hungry to find out information. For whatever reason, I couldn't really explain it. And the first thing I learned is that no one's an expert, which makes it really great to just call yourself like, hey, I'm a Web3 nerd. And they're like, ooh, tell us everything, you know? And we're in that phase right now. We're like, we're at the dial-up internet phase of all of this. And no one's an expert, which is really great. You know, we're at the beginning of a lot of things. Like remember the beginning of Facebook or the beginning of YouTube, you know, like the beginning of the internet, like all those things. I realized there's patterns in those kind of developmental cycles that feel very similar to right now. And also, I think in general, we're due for like a revolution. You know, it's been about 30 years of the internet. Social media has matured. It's like, you know, we've done everything we can with it, I feel like, to an extent. We all kind of fucked it up like we do.
Mm-hmm. Per use. Yeah.
But it really did, in my opinion, was reveal, you know, who we really are. Or, you know, in a larger sense, maybe existentially, like this was another mirror that we had to hold up to ourselves to be like, yeah, we're just a bunch of narcissistic, like conceited dick faces mostly. Mm-hmm. And we like just want to post about ourselves and brag and like all that kind of shit. And now we're all sick of it. Like now we all saw it, you know, and it's super gross. And maybe that was like the ultimate goal of what's happening, you know?
And but like, do you really think that everyone has seen it and that it's all gross, or we're, you know, us three, you know, have this, that it, because I feel like social media has had like this extra layer. Now, when you go and you're out, you want to take out your phone and like you want to post a story, and it's like there's no presence anymore.
Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting. I was the typical Instagram user up until March of 2020, and I, for whatever reason, just could not care less anymore about mm-hmm. posting anything for any reason. I don't know. I think you're right. Yes. There's like, yes, there's still people that care way too much about it. And it's obviously an addictive cycle that has been fine tuned for years. And it's, you know, attention and focus is like the most valuable thing in the world, in the sense of like the way that it's being used, you know? So I don't know. I want to say that we all kind of agree. Like, I don't think anyone's advocating for social media. Like, no one's like out there like, hey, this is amazing. This is super good for you.
So good for you. Yeah.
Our Facebook.
It really improves your mental health.
Yeah. No one's out there doing that.
You know? But there's some, okay, hold on. But on the other side, like, you do have those boomers where it's like, I just like to keep connected. Mm-hmm. It's so nice that we're all connected now, isn't it?
I know.
It's like, you still have those, but.
It's called a group chat, Mom. I know.
Yeah, Mom.
No, you're right. And there is like, yes, honestly, I keep my Facebook around. Even I don't even use it actually. But like I held on to it for so long because it was the only place that I could share videos of my kids to, you know, my parents. Mm-hmm.
I also think it's strange how just, you know, with Facebook, it's this concept of just collecting, you know, people that you've had in your life at different periods, like no matter like if you're like super close still or were at some point, or, you know, just like any person, like maybe you went on a trip and you met someone and they're there, and it's like you're experiencing their life vicariously through like what they're posting, but you're not ever actually communicating with them. So if you think about it, it's like you're getting these life updates on people that you might not have talked to for what, like 15 or more years.
Time to purge, baby.
It's really, it's just weird. It's like a window into people's lives. And then it's unlikely that you're even speaking with a person, even like a small percentage of all those.
I think like even just to like touch on that too, like even crazier is like, you know, when you kind of get into uncomfortable situations and you reach for your Instagram and you start to scroll. So mm-hmm. then you're like having these like subliminal like dopamine hits of people and like their family members, like all at once. And then you put your phone down and like you just got like this insane life update about people you don't even speak to, like you haven't spoken to in years. And you like subconsciously now are like keeping up with their lives.
And then yes. I feel like the human like, tendency. What? Yeah. And then I feel like the natural human tendency is obviously to like compare, or, you know, just that feeling of like, oh, well, okay, this is where they are in their life. Like, what does that compare to mine? And then like the different ages, like, okay, so should I be at this place by that time? Or, you know, it's just really weird to see how it plays out.
I know. And it's anyway, yes, none of us, I don't think anyone's advocating for this. They all understand mm-hmm. what's happening. But yeah, I mean, it's played its course in many ways. Anyway, like the point was, and I'd love to go off on social media all day long.
Oh, yeah.
But like my point was, like, you know, as far as technological innovations go, it's kind of ran its course in the sense of like this, the current version of the web, web 2.0, which is what we have right now, is social and, you know, like a lot of content and everything. But one of the things that always fascinated me about when I learned about web 3 was like the only thing that you can own outright in web 2.0 is a domain name. Mm. And then everything else is you just give it away for digital hearts and thumbs. You know, you upload a video to YouTube, you might get a fraction of a penny for advertising revenue, but like they own it, they share it around, they're the platform, you know. And we as content creators and artists like hope for an audience and wish for virality, you know, and those are the places that only that allow it. And so I mean that part's run its course too. And that was one thing that's fascinated about learning about Web3 is like one of the hopes and dreams of this is digital ownership. So the ability to own everything that you create and not give it away to a middleman or a platform first, and then hope for some kind of money in return. The thing is though, I don't really know how that's going to work yet. Like, because we still have an understanding of what platforms and centralization are in Web 2. Like everything you see right now, Twitter, Facebook, mm-hmm. YouTube, everything. Those are, and that's the thing too, is that like, all of those different initially like, you know, kind of disparate networks have all been consumed into like five or six conglomerate corporations, you know? So all of those things are leading to, in my opinion, like just, this is like run its course. It's all of the, you know, kind of juice has been sucked out of it. There's still going to be stuff there to get, obviously, but it's kind of like, I think as humans, it's like time for something new.
Yeah.
I think Web3 is that.
So can you kind of explain a little bit more about what Web3 is and sort of like how it'll change everything?
I mean, okay, so well, we can just do the Web 1, 2, and 3 first. Definitely. So
I like that.
I like that too.
Web 1 was in the 80s. So initially, before even the first version of the internet, DARPA was tasked with creating a decentralized communication network across the country in case there were places in DC or other command centers were wiped out in some kind of nuclear war. They wanted to be able to create a decentralized network of communication. They could send messages throughout the country. And it didn't rely on one certain headquarters. Every piece had the ability to kind of take command. So that was the original idea of the internet, and it was a military project. And that was in the 60s and 70s, I think, and in the 80s. And then in the, late 80s, early 90s, it started to become more mainstream where you could create, if you knew HTML, you could create your own web pages, and you could send, you know, hyperlinks was like the big thing of Web 1, which is the ability to like have text that would take you somewhere else. And it was all like text, and there was no images. There was very few images. It was all very, you know, very, very primitive compared to what we have right now. And then right around like 2004, really when Facebook and MySpace were like really taking off, that's kind of the deciding point people talk about of Web 2. That's when Web 2 started, because it became social media, became this ability to connect with people, share images and share messages and like just make it a lot more usable for general people that didn't need to know how to code or anything. And it's everything that we see right now. You know, it's that started in 2004, 05, 06, you know. And then as those platforms started, and YouTube was in 2007 when it started, as they grew and understood what the power was, they evolved and were purchased or, you know, whatever, like mangled into what they are now. And so Web 3 is, you kind of characterize Web 2 as centralization, like platforms, you know. The thing is, like we go to websites, we have Spotify, we have YouTube, like all those places we go to, they're kind of like central villages that we all congregate in and like consume media. The thing that kind of blows my mind, and I'm guilty of it, is like, we don't own anything anymore. Mostly we can just pay for access to other people's stuff. Like I don't have a DVD. I have a DVD player. I have DVDs, mm-hmm. but it's like, I don't buy vinyl. I don't buy music. I just pay for a subscription to a place that plays music. And I think that's a characteristic of Web 2. These centralized platforms basically allow us to pay them money to access their content. And we've lost the ability to own anything, or we've given it up. We haven't lost it. We gave it up on purpose because it was convenient. Mm. And Web 3.0 is the revolution in digital ownership. It's the idea using blockchain, crypto, and NFTs as like the three kind of foundational blocks of Web 3. The ability to create a digital asset, verify it as unique, and then own it and sell it, not just using dollars, but using cryptocurrency. And that doesn't mean, because NFTs can be any digital file. So it could be this podcast, or it could be a YouTube video, or just a video, you know, like those kind of things. But we haven't figured out yet how that's going to look, because we're still living inside of the like platform centralized world thinking. Snoop Dogg actually dropped his album on Gala. It was Gala Music, is a Web3 platform. That's usually it's a gaming platform. He dropped it a week before the Super Bowl. It was Back on Death Row, I think it was what it was called. And he sold the entire album as NFTs. But every song was $4,000 basically. But everyone could like, and you were able to sell like 140,000 tracks of his album. Like that was all they had. It was like 140,000 versions of the 14 songs in the album, and every song was $4,000. But the thing is, once you owned that song, you could sell it. And you could sit on it, like you could own it, actually own it, like, and use parts of it. And if you wanted to let it rise in value or whatever it would do as it appreciates and goes through time, and then sell it to other people. And what's fascinating about that process is through the use of smart contracts, they're called, if I sold it to somebody, I would get the royalties from that sale. And then Snoop Dogg with the royalties from that sale as well. So every time that song would change hands and be sold, he would be getting a royalty for it. And so those smart contract things are all done through code. And that's, you know, and he sets up that structure. So he understands, like he knows how much royalties he's getting every time that song changes hands. That's kind of like, that just happened like a month ago, you know, so like people are still figuring out how this is going to work. And he said, if you bought the entire album, I don't know how much that would have been, like that's an actual, then you get to party with him in his mansion.
Oh, that's cool.
So is that album exclusively there and nowhere else? Like you can't, like if you wanted to listen to like a song from it, you can't go to other platforms that are currently in existence, because then it wouldn't, that like render it, it wouldn't have the value, right? Unless it's only through this new platform, like through the new web.
I know, Web 3, yeah.
Web 3, is that how it works?
Well, that's the thing. So it actually is on Spotify.
Is it?
The album, yeah.
Okay.
But what is happening with NFTs are the ability to create utility. So not just owning a song, but having the ability to provide exclusive access to events or access to him, it kind of becomes a ticket. Mm-hmm. And that's where the value comes in. You know, like I can't prove to anyone that I listened. I mean, I can prove with my Spotify listening history that I listened to Snoop Dogg, you know, but mm-hmm. you can actually, with blockchain technology, verify that I own this piece of digital content. And anybody else can verify it too. So if I wanted, like, just as a hypothetical, I could meet Snoop Dogg and show him my verified account that I bought this song, you know, and it's not just like I bought a song, like an album from a store that many other people have. Like, I bought one version of your song as a piece of art, and here's the verified like part of it, you know. And that's like, we're still messing around with what even that means, you know. And it's like we discovered fire as cavemen, and we're like, wow, it burns things. What else can we do with it, you know? And we don't know. That's the other exciting part. The ability to create digital ownership through verifiable like blockchain ledger entries is a very simple and very powerful technological revolution that's only been around for since 2008. It was invented. I think I might have gone off the deep end.
No, not at all. Okay. I'm just kind of thinking about like the idea and the evolution of what it means for something to be valuable.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know.
Right? Because it's once this all becomes part of the collective, this will hold more value because mm-hmm. more people will understand that it's valuable, which then in turn makes it more valuable, if that makes sense. Like, and I guess that's like more of like the idea of revolving money. Well, money is only valuable because somebody else thinks it's valuable. If you really think about it, like a dollar bill, what the hell am I going to do with a dollar bill? Like, it doesn't really provide any type of utility for me in any sense. But because everybody around me thinks it's valuable, it is now a $1 bill of it's money.
It's the greatest story ever told mm-hmm. to mankind. We all agree that it's a dollar, and then it becomes a dollar. And that's it.
It used to actually be backed by something. And now, no longer is that the case. So now we have this issue of like being able to print so much money. And I feel like that's why we're hitting the end of that road too now with like the economic crisis. Like, now we're never going to be able to pay back this national debt. So it kind of makes sense why it might come to this like culminating event where like the world economy has to crash and then start new. Like, that's where it seems like it's headed. And then of course it's going digital. So then that's why we're like getting into all the, you know, like the crypto thought, or like, you know, who knows, like whatever the digital platform will be going forward.
I mean, that's the thing. I think it's something we don't know yet, you know. Ethereum is like the standard right now, at least as far as like it's what a lot of companies have built apps for, and it's, you know, it's a token. The Ethereum token is about $3,000, you know, per token right now. But the thing that's great about it is Bitcoin was the original, and it's like, I don't know, whatever, $35,000 per token, but like you can't do anything with it. It's not, it's not usable. Where like Ethereum, you can build apps off of it. You can build software with it. So like, that's where like OpenSea, which is where the NFT marketplace is that everyone's using. It's where a lot of people are buying and selling, you know, Bored Ape Yacht Clubs and CryptoPunks and like other art projects are all on OpenSea. That uses the Ethereum like software platform to write all of the blockchain entries and stuff. So Ethereum makes it useful. It's also very wasteful, and we're moving beyond all that stuff. But like, I don't know, again, sorry, back to your point about value. Like, that's what really fascinates me is like, so it's like, wait, we can just write some code and then all of a sudden this like token is worth a dollar. And then it's like, yeah. Then you start being like, well, how else do we do that? Like, okay, if the dollar was backed by gold back in the day, like, how did that matter? Like, why did that matter? Why is gold valuable? Like, how do we even agree on the value of gold that is even worth this much? You know, how do we even know how much gold there is? Like, we don't even know how much gold there is that exists in this world. And to say that it's worth this much, it's all just agreements, and it's all just a story that we tell each other, you know? And we haven't had to deal with a conflict of that story. Like, we haven't had to deal with a challenge to that story for like centuries. I don't even know the last time as a civilization we've had to look at an alternative to money.
Yeah. And what's really crazy too is that now that we're in this type of digital age and that we've become so dependent on all of the luxuries and outsourcing our knowledge in all these ways, like we no longer have the basic survival skills. We no longer have the ability to grow food, to farm, to build things, you know, like we wouldn't be able to build shelter, you know, like that type of thing. So if there was a time before, which there has, where this shift had to happen, at least people were more self-sufficient. Whereas now, like if we lose this monetary system, even like temporarily, it would be catastrophic. Like obviously during the Great Depression, it was catastrophic, but at the same time, people were, you know, like 100 times more self-sufficient then. And there was still like so many people that died from that. So it's kind of just thinking about like how can there be a smooth transition if there's even going to be, you know?
I don't think it's possible, yeah. Honestly. Because I mean, well, I just was thinking about like the only retaliation we have against Putin right now without direct conflict is sanctions. So we're like basically taking all the numbers out of his bank account. And like, and then if you, I don't know, like as I'm kind of looking at this, it honestly like changed my whole worldview once I started thinking about that. Like if money's a story and it's not really made up and I mean, it's like not really real and we kind of made it up. And we live and die like literally by how much money we make. I don't know. It's just like, what are we all doing here? And, mm-hmm. and we've all, and like, you can sit there and be like naive and be like, well, I don't really care about money and like, blah, blah,
until
blah.
Until you like, need it. And like, you, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like people that if you
don't
say
need,
they...
Yeah. If you don't need to worry about money, then that's an indicator that like, you don't know what it's like to not have it.
No, I feel like, and also people that say like, they don't care about money and which is why they don't have it. Like they don't have faith in themselves that they can make it.
That's a good point too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My thing too, like I had a major money meltdown like a few years ago. And I realized at the end of it all, it was, I didn't value myself highly enough. Mm-hmm. Like I was, mm-hmm. I wasn't broke because I lacked skills or education or experience or like, you know, support systems in early life. I had all those things. I didn't believe in myself. That's why I was broke, you know, in the sense of like my personal worth is a reflection of my, you know, monetary worth, was like a mind blowing kind of realization. But no, I just think like, I don't know. It's something about having to look at the world. And when you hear the word money and how we're so consumed by it and everyone talks about it, and there's like movie, like everything around you is including the story of money. If you think about it as a story that we don't need, that we can put down and change, that's the thing that like, I don't know, it just starts to really, really make me think.
Yeah, it's almost like this just a huge like enslavement in a sense. And then you also think about like we are a culture just like based on consumption and we consume, like consume and spend and spend and spend and spend. And at the end of the day, like what do we have that's really truly valuable in that sense?
And also now just dealing with like the threat of, you know, dealing with inflation now. So something that kind of blew my mind is that with the current inflation that's at 7.5%, over 5 years, if it remains at that, what they're saying is a conservative estimate. Like some I've heard have said, like it could truly be closer to like 20 or 25%. But if it really is 7.5% over 5 years, you supposedly lose like 35% of your purchasing power. And then if it were to remain in place for like 10 years, you lose 75% of your purchasing power. And then what's crazier is on top of that, you don't, like, you still have to factor in taxes because those would probably remain stable. So really at the end of the day, like, how much of a percentage are you actually keeping after that?
You're not, you're losing money. Yeah. If you have, let's say you have like $30,000 in a savings account, that's like a quote unquote high yield savings account, you get what, 0.2% interest?
Yeah.
So you're literally losing money.
And you know what banks are doing and now to stop from being able to pay you that little tiny bit? They charge you if you aren't paperless. So like I've seen I had an account where like they'll charge like $2 a month if you're not like paperless, and then you'll see like your accounts like slowly dwindling, and you're not even making up for whatever percentage that they're giving you, you know?
I remember, and I know this because like I have an American Express high yield savings account, and like 4 years ago, it was like at 0.9% interest rate, right? And like back then, I'm like, oh my God, look at me. So then slowly I started to realize like every month I would get a letter, and the letter would say, congratulations, your new interest rate is 0.8%. And I'm like, but it was 0.9% last time. So it's like the psychological, like how they kind of just, I don't even know, like you're not going to notice that, you know, it's just dwindling and dwindling and dwindling. And so, yeah, I feel like people that are used to, and these people are on Facebook right now, you know, chatting with their boomer friends, but are used to like holding money in these savings accounts, or should be enraged, should be so mad that all of this is occurring. And yes, it's an old world. It's an old world. You're seeing like the old world crumble.
Yes.
Like right in front of us.
And it's not sustainable.
It's not sustainable.
The other thing too, with just thinking about a generation ago and how they were so much more set up, like in general for stability, like with pensions and all of that. Now, so much of that is going away. There's the issue with Social Security, how, you know, are people going to even be able to live to that age to take out their Social Security? Like, supposedly it's already like, you know, bankrupt. And now the issue is like, is it even going to pay out? Is it even going to be half of what we've put into it? Like
what we put
problem.
Into it.
Yeah.
And I just can go on and on and on.
No,
and
it's not.
No,
exactly. It's gonna work.
No. Yeah.
And like, you know, they all know it.
Yeah. So wouldn't the perfect thing, like at a systems level, you know, like this is going to sound awful, but like, wouldn't the perfect tragedy be a cyber attack of some kind or something that just like wipes it all out? Because then at that point, like it would have to reset. Like, is that what the whole Great Reset is about? Like a chance to like reset this failing system in a way to try to place blame somewhere else, you know, like so that people don't have to take responsibility for what's been going on for so long, just like the stock market, like how much fraud has gone on, like, you know, like mortgaging, the mortgage situation that happened, like people are, and then how they repackage debt, like they'll buy debt, like, and just like keep moving it around and like they'll make money off it. You know, it's just like this whole thing. Like, I feel like there's going to be no, there hasn't been any like real, I guess, like consequences to that in a sense. Like it's just like causing the crumble to happen faster, you know?
Well, yeah. And it's a product of greed and stupidity, just like in 08. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, I wonder, because that's the thing I'm wondering about. Like, crypto is a direct challenge to established and entrenched power structures. Mm-hmm. And do they know that and they're just jumping in to try and control it? Or do they not know it and they just look at it as like more money to be made and they just are just blindly jumping into it? Because like if people start to realize that they can just create value out of nothing whenever they want, at whatever value that they want, you know, what are we doing here? Like who, why do we need a bank? Why do we need any of these things? What even is a mortgage? What is the price of a house? Like, why is it that much money? You know? And like, those are the questions that all this is coming. And so like, are they going to give it up easily? Hell no.
No.
You know, fuck no.
No, you can fuck no. And you can also see it like how they're trying to tax every, like you see it now, like the tax regulations that are occurring.
Yeah.
People are going to be getting slammed for not paying their taxes on this, on whatever crypto they've made. Like best believe they're coming for you.
Or they just don't pay taxes. I don't know. Like what? No, it's like the IRS is already understaffed. You know, like right, they can't even get to it. But no, I mean, okay, you're right. Like, yes, pay your taxes. But again, this is like, it's a tool of control. And it's a tool of control that's been around for almost as long as we've been a civilization. And this is just an opportunity to look back at what it is and engage in a challenge to that story of power and control. Yes, I mean, like, so we can play inside of the 3D world of like, save for your pension and like, hopefully you can pay your taxes on every year and stuff. And like, but I think that's giving up the ability to think deeper and not even just think deeper, but like act in a more, you know, almost like a transcendent way of like participating in the, like the last chapter of money in mankind. It's like, I don't know. Like, I just feel like that's kind of, you can jump in and be involved in that and get, I guess the thing about it too, is like, you can understand that money, since it is made up, it's something about like, you can address that as an energy that you can bring into your life in many ways, you know? And I think, and it, that's almost been like kind of the, like the snake oil kind of sell of money, is that like, you have to work really hard to earn it. And it's like, takes a lot of work, you know, and all this stuff, like that's not entirely the case. If it is entirely made up, and if it's something that we made up ourselves, if you step away from the kind of power that it has and look at it like that, it's easier to control in your favor, you know? And I just think like, whether we believe it or not, you know, crypto is showing up as that challenge. And it's going to force us to look into it, you know?
So still on this topic, I don't know. I don't remember the exact name for the term, but there's like this new type of, I don't know if you call it like an economy or like a payment philosophy, where you have a service. So say like a training. And I'm the way I learned about this was through Charles Eisenstein. He has like this whole system set up for like his trainings and his work that he does, where he doesn't assign the value to it. Like he allows the consumer to decide like how much they want to pay for the service, which I thought was really fascinating because it's like a whole different way of conceptualizing it. So it's like, say, okay, I developed this training. I think it should be, you know, like you think it should be worth like 300. But what if the value of that training to someone else is worth like 5,000? So like, why would you limit the price to whatever you conceptualize in your mind if like someone else is willing to pay like a lot more and thinks it's worth it? So I thought that was just like crazy to think about it differently. But at the same time, then you would think like, but then the fear, I guess, like the lack fear would be like, but then people might not want to pay for it, or like they'll only want to pay $1.99 because like they don't want to have to spend money if they don't have to, you know? So it's just, that was one thing. I didn't know if like you guys had heard of that.
Like pay what you can.
Yeah. Like sort of that concept of like, don't limit it to like your price, like let people pay what they think they should pay for it based on like the value they assign to it.
Love that.
Yeah.
Well, I love the idea that you said too. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh no, go ahead.
I just love the idea of you like saying that lack mentality of like, well, they're only paying me like a dollar then if I don't put a price on it, you know, like that's the kind of stuff that we all need to like really address. Like, where did that story come from? Like and we've been told that story and it's been all ingrained into our brains that like, you're going to get taken advantage of. People are greedy, you know, like all those kinds of things. And those are the things I think we need to address. And at least, I love what you brought that up. Sorry, you had something to say.
Oh, and I also like on the flip side is people will also have like this guilty conscience of like, oh, like, you know, I have to, it's almost like when you have like donation-based courses or like donation-based yoga classes, like people have like this, or for me, I guess I'm just speaking for myself, like I feel guilty if I don't donate. And I think on average, you actually end up making more money. So even if people over donate and under donate, on average,
it averages out
to be still more than what you would have had if you like would have like put a price point on it.
Yeah. No, I think it's, you're right.
We have a donation page, by the way, on www.matrixassassins.com. We never talk about it, but it's there if anybody wants to.
Good one. Man, that was like a long journey to that one.
It's a lot.
Totally planned.
I only play the long game.
It was like 3D chess moves.
Yeah. Crypto. Sort of maybe just going more into the future of it. I know we kind of got into the tax issue. If it really is going to be the next, you know, the next thing, I know that obviously like government institutions are starting to get in and they're investing in it. And it seems like they're putting a lot of resources and thought into which ones they want to back or which ones will be most likely to carry forward. And then just the implications again about, you know, like, you know, with the regulation and then the taxing, like trying to hedge against that, you know, it's just kind of like, it started off as like a great way to sort of be able to actually make money and not be so like, you know, repressed in a sense that we are now with our current system.
Well, yeah, there are a lot of really legit innovations happening too. Mm-hmm. There's one that I've been following called Stellar Lumens.
Oh yeah.
Have you heard of that?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, that's a big one about basically creating a lightning fast way to send money across the world in the native currency, whatever it is, you know. So those things are happening because, I mean, I guess it would take like at least 3 to 5 business days. If you did it the traditional way or whatever, go through all this Byzantine process of transferring in fees. The stuff like that's happening. The implications really are that, like, you know, payment and finance hasn't had the same type of paradigm shifting revolution that the internet like has provided for other things, you know, like communication specifically, but finance and money and everything has stayed the same. I think it kind of fascinating, like, it took about 10 or 12 years for payment processing to actually work on the internet when it first started. We didn't do a lot. I mean, it worked, but like it wasn't widely adopted and like secure and trusted like it is now.
Wasn't Elon part of that?
PayPal, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel like people forget that. Like Elon like started PayPal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, him and his brother, I think.
Yeah, which is pretty kind of wild to think about.
I think it's, yeah. I mean, yeah, I know. I mean, he's been around forever.
He's been around. I just remember, like, I don't know, the thought of PayPal and Venmo and like being able to pay people so quickly is, I don't know. Yeah.
And now isn't that being taxed? Like you have to, I think they're starting to generate statements for any income made through Venmo, PayPal, Cash App, that type of thing.
Yeah, that reminds me. We actually have to like file a document. Just FYI. We're doing tax season right now and it's I'm so confused all the time.
Yeah.
Perpetually complexed about it all.
That's a great podcast title.
We're perpetually complexed.
Yeah.
It's gonna be my new one.
I know, it's horrible. It's a horrible process. It doesn't make any sense. And it's like complicated and opaque on purpose.
Yeah, because it's almost like if everything is so digital now and like people really aren't using cash as much and people never really tracked cash that much in general when it came to taxes, really, why can't the taxes just be determined already? Like, why do we have to go through this whole process and overcomplicate it? Like, why can't it just work out? And I don't know. I just feel like it's that way for a reason, probably because like the people who really understand it are the ones who benefit the most from it. But I don't know. It's always bothered me.
Again, money is a tool of power and control. Mm-hmm. And you see it in everything.
So what can our listeners take from this conversation and utilize? And like, what are some things that our listeners can start implementing to maybe, I don't know, put themselves in a good financial trajectory in this new dimension that we're headed into? Like, what would you propose.
I love that. The winners are always the builders, you know? So if you have software experience, you know, you can learn the Web3 software languages relatively easy. As far as from what I've heard, if you know this process already, so like just really jump in. I always look at it as like, I miss so many boats in my life. Like I missed the YouTube boat and I missed like even just the internet boat when they first started, and we all kind of laughed at them and joked about it. And all of a sudden it became serious. And then all of a sudden there were millionaires, you know, like,
yeah.
So I look at this as like, this is a boat. It's right in front of you. Jump on it and just get into it. I personally wouldn't recommend getting into the NFT art game right now. It's really disgusting. It's a ton of scammers.
Yeah, I've heard that.
There's scammers that put on projects and they do a rug pull, it's called.
Rug pull. I know all these terms. Apen. Yeah.
Exactly. All of this stuff has happened before. This is like a typical human process of like when we find a new shiny toy, we do all this shit to it.
Going back to rug pull for Nicole, actually like means.
It's just when you basically hype up a project and then you say you're going to drop a token or you're going to drop, like you mint the project in the sense of like you put it up for sale. And then you just like disappear and take all the money, you know, like you have this huge hype project. People invest a bunch of money into it. They spend a bunch of time into it. And then you just run away with the money, you know, and like shut the whole project down. It's super easy to do that. Mm-hmm. If you're able to like manipulate people are gotten smarter now because they've gotten screwed over, but like, that was a big deal. Like right in the height of like November, December, January was like the peak of like OpenSea NFT art right now, at least in the current like trend. It could peak again, but so anyway, you know, we all missed out on Bored Ape Yacht Club. And if you don't know what that means, that was the NFT project that started actually right around a year ago exactly. And it sold for 0.5 ETH, I think, at the most when it first started, which was about, you know, $1,500. That was, no, I think it might even be lower, like, because usually an NFT project will start at 0.1 ETH, which is relatively affordable. But basically, it went from, you know, less than one ether, this is the Ethereum token, to I think it's like 35 or something like that now. Like 35 ETH is the cheapest you can get on a Bored Ape Yacht Club NFT. So it's around $300,000, whatever, just to go in. So if you had bought it at the floor at the very beginning, you know, you could legitimately retire, or at least like.
And what was it at the very beginning? What was the value?
I want to say like 0.2 ETH, maybe.
And how much is that in?
Like $1,200.
$1,200. Okay.
But that's the thing too, though. Even back then, Ethereum was only like $400. Like 2021 was like the year that all of this showed up. So if you had bought anything at the beginning of this time last year, and you just waited, you know, Ethereum started at like $400 around this time last year, and then went up to $5,000, and then has gone back down to like $3,200 since then. So, you know, say you bought 10 ETH for nothing, you know, you would have been a millionaire. And so that's like, everyone, like that's FOMO. Like everyone talks about that too. Like, so we all kind of, I missed out on it. Many people missed out on it, and now they're trying to jump in on it. And then all the scammers see that it's profitable and easy. So they're making a bunch of money off of people that like me, I got scammed. It's like a rite of passage. No, I feel like I'm truly a Web3 nerd now. Yeah.
So are there any like DeFi projects that you're currently looking into, like, what are you researching? And I always like to have at least like one granular of like, you can go online and Google this phrase or try to research this. And so for people that are listening to this conversation, like, it's taken a lot of, for them to be in this NFT crypto conversation, it's calling them. They're being called.
You know, how do you get over that initial hump?
How do you get over, like, the initial hump? Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you that what got me over it initially was when I saw a video. I guess we could post a link if you wanted. Sure. Is that something that you do? Mm-hmm. But it explained the metaverse, which, by the way, is an inaccurate term. I can get into that later. But and the point of it was, they talked about money and how it was an agreement, and how crypto was the challenge to that agreement. But then also the idea that in what you currently have right now as a creator, you just give away, and you hope for some kind of, you know, response from people, but you can't own anything inside Web 2. So you have to, like, this is the age of digital ownership. That was kind of the thing that put me over the edge, because it was like, okay, I could possibly create objects that I can sell and actually make money off of and set my own price. But that wasn't a good explanation. I'm trying to think of, like, actionable steps to like look at. Okay, well, here's one thing that you can get into, I think, that could be beneficial this year. Okay, so Ethereum is a blockchain. And it's basically very energy intensive, environmentally kind of dangerous. It's slow. And it's kind of like the MS-DOS version of blockchain right now. Like, it's like the first one.
I have a question. What makes it environmentally dangerous? Like, what does that mean?
Sorry, just that it takes a lot of energy.
It's, okay.
It will take more energy as it gets bigger, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So then you had, there's like a whole question of like, what are we going to use the energy for? Like, how are we going to make this energy to like run these things? Anyway, but yeah, it is kind of like the first version of what we're doing, and like a first usable version of a blockchain. But there's many other blockchains that are being created from scratch right now that are innovating on that concept. So I would look up Solana. Is a good blockchain, Solana, that is an innovator on Ethereum that could actually be something that we use on a daily basis, because, you know, it is a blockchain, so every transaction is recorded on the ledger, but it takes a lot of energy and computational power to add those things to the ledger. And then to have them verified by different, you know, by different copies of that blockchain. So those all result in gas fees, basically transaction fees to do things on the blockchain. And they can range from $50 to $700, depending on what the congestion is, even to just like do some transaction. So that's like a major barrier right now. Solana is working on, the way they're doing it is like the transactions can be made much faster, many more than per second, and they don't cost anything, you know? So Solana is a really great blockchain to like at least kind of look into, and you can invest in that. It's pretty cheap right now. Ethereum is kind of messing up. They had promised upgrades to the network that haven't come. So everyone's kind of waiting around for another version of a blockchain that works in the ways that we need it to. Okay. Second thing, play to earn gaming is going to be a lot, is a big deal, where instead of throwing money into a pit, like if you play Fortnite and you're just buying skins and you're buying avatar things for your character in the game, you're just giving money away to Epic Games that makes Fortnite. So play to earn gaming is the ability to actually earn a real token that's tradable on an exchange by playing a game. You know, like, yes, you can earn XP, like experience points in a game, and they could be like loosely connected to some sort of value maybe. But like, just imagine those XP points becoming a token that's tradable on an exchange that goes up and down in value. They're like basically a stock, you know. That stuff.
So the
is
more
happening.
You play, the more you play, the more you. Okay.
Yeah.
It like reminds me of like Brave Browser. Like the more you browse, like the more you, like create this token, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's like the same preface.
But it's like, but now it's a real thing. It's an asset. It's a stock, and it's tradable on Coinbase and KuCoin and Gemini that are all exchanges. So mm-hmm. you don't have to even play the game. You can just invest in the token. And if the game gets popular, then you make money. So Decentraland is a good example of mm-hmm. that. So that's a good word to Google. That was the first one that kind of talked about virtual real estate and land owning that was like a big deal. I personally think it's a joke. It's like, if you are going to spend millions of dollars on a virtual piece of land and then no one shows up, how much money is that worth? You know? Mm-hmm. So I just don't think that's something that it's going to be one of those bubbles. And we're in like an everything bubble right now anyway. We're in the dot-com bubble of this whole thing.
Totally. You know? Totally. So, and it's like, you know, when you're in a bubble, it's like, when everything is just like astronomically like crazy expensive, people are paying, mm-hmm. you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars for like things that like could be valuable, could be not. I remember in 2008, there were people that were saying like, you could tell, like you could feel we were in a bubble, like people spending like insane amounts of money. You know, you would just see like Ferraris around all the time. And like, you knew like something was about to pop. And maybe that's like the vibe that's going on now.
Yes, definitely.
And also like inflation, like you can't even buy like anything for, it's just everything. It's just why it's just, you can feel it.
It's like, I feel like we're just at the beginning of it too. So any pain that's being felt now, I almost feel like it's just going to go up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish there was an easier way to explain like how to send money to stuff. Okay. So the way that it works is, you have a wallet, like a digital wallet, like MetaMask is another word to Google. That's a good wallet to start with. It's basically a Chrome browser extension that you just install, and then you set up your account, and that becomes your, you know, kind of digital identity online, really. Like, instead of logging in with a password and username, you log in with your MetaMask wallet.
What you're going to see the transition from, you have web 1.0, which is dial up. Like that's how you connected. And you have web 2.0, Facebook login. Use your Facebook login to sign up. Like everyone knows, everyone does that. Use your Gmail. And then web 3.0, you're going to have connect wallet. And you connect wallet through like a MetaMask or something like that. And like, I feel like that's kind of going to be the new shift. Like when you want to log into something, you're connecting your wallet.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, and then beyond that, you know,
isn't that disturbing now or no?
Totally.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Cause then that's like the connection to, you know, like if there is a social credit score system, it's like connected to your wallet now.
But aren't we already connected to the wallet? If you think about it, like social mm-hmm. credit score, can't they just look at our Googling history and see all the weird shit we've been Googling?
Yeah, of course. No, they can. Yeah, they can. I think it just hasn't been like, there hasn't been consequences yet, you know, or whatever. Like it hasn't.
Or have
been,
them. Have
right?
there been.
That's true.
Okay. I love how you talk about this because there is like a legitimate thing happening right now. There's a token I heard about a couple months ago called Chili's. Now it's CHZ is how it's traded. And if you go to CoinGecko or Coinbase, you can see the like trading charts on everything. So it's a real token. It's based on what they're trying to do is they're creating a social token is what they're calling it. So right now they're just doing it with sports teams. So like Juventus, the soccer team, is like actually signed on to this token. And what they can do is either they can trade under the Chili's token, or they can make their own token that's traded and like tied to Chili's. But the token goes up and down in value based on like the success of the team. And it's not like, but it's not like a stock like you, that you're trading, or like it is like a stock that you're trading like that, but like it's not like the traditional stock in like a stock market. It's based on the actual value that the team creates, which is not just its wins and losses, but who, like the stars that play on the team, like the amount of social media following that it creates for some kind of event that happens in the game. Like that type of value is now being commoditized and tradable on these types of exchanges. You know, like we're moving beyond this like old form of what we think valuable, like value is, because we've seen, and especially with social media, like true, there is a, not I wouldn't say true value, but like there is a real actual value to virality, you know, like to things that create memes, or like when Elon Musk gets high on Joe Rogan, mm-hmm. like that's an actual cultural moment. We're able to commoditize culture now and how things can be affecting culture. And that's like, that's another thing that's fascinating about crypto is like, well, now we can just apply value to this because we think it's cool. And it actually, then it becomes valuable, you know?
Well, it's like a big play too, like on community, like you have to have the community involved because that's what makes things more valuable in a sense. And I also just had this thought, like, what if we're being like, is the word commoditized?
Isn't that, I mean, like, what that, if, isn't that the human capital concept?
The human cap. Okay. I was thinking the human capital concept, like where they're playing, like we're the tokens and they're like betting on us.
So it is, that's what it's about.
That's a thing. Yeah,
that's like where it could lead. But as far as the teams thing, because I almost could see this as like a pilot or just like an experiment to see how it plays out first before it's applied like in mass. So if they, okay, so you know how you always hear in sports, like, you know, people bet on sports, whatever, whatever. So say like one of the players gets into some type of incident outside of the sport. So like, say he like beats up his girlfriend or like gets like a drunk driving charge or something like that, would that then bring the team value down? Like if something negative happens?
Yeah. I mean, like it depends, you know, it's maybe it would go up because maybe like what he did during the crash was something, you know, like, so it's not to say like, it's like we're commoditizing the cultural impact of things. And like, it's not going to be teams. It's going to be celebrities. Fucking Kardashians are going to have their own token. They're going to trade it. And like, and then when shit happens, it can go up and down, you know?
Well, that's just like a stock market. Like, I think it was Tiger Woods. When that whole thing happened with him and his car crash, like he affected the stock market. So it's like, it's no different. There's a shift, essentially.
You just haven't been able to do that before. It's an innovation, not just in technology, but in philosophically, what do we consider valuable? And it's really fascinating.
And I also think about the implications just going into the future, because now we hear all this talk about how jobs are becoming obsolete. Like there's not enough people to hire for certain positions. Like there's all these shortages in that sense. So like the future of work and the future of how we bring value in like a market that's slowly shrinking in a sense, as far as like the number of people that are willing to work, that are in the workforce, whatever, like thinking about how that could all change in this new arena.
Well, that's just those are just shitty jobs.
Yeah. But for the most part, but it's also impacting like other sectors. Like when there's a shortage in some places, like it's going to, you know, like it's going to be kind of like a overall effect eventually.
Oh yeah. Well, I think this kind of plays into universal basic income, you know, like, could there be like a city token that we get as we live in the city and
energy tokens.
Yeah. I mean, okay, here's one. Yeah. Here's a good Google word. Helium network. Have you heard of that? I have a miner on my desk right here, actually. So what the way that works is, this is a great application of crypto, in my opinion. Okay. So the way it works is, the Helium network is a network of hotspots that help the Internet of Things, the IoT networks, run. So they communicate through this Helium network, not through typical Wi-Fi. And you can buy, it's not as easy now, but you can buy a hotspot basically, and with an antenna, and it just goes up in your, in a window or whatever, and they give you some specifications for good coverage. But based on how much load and information you're transferring through your hotspot, you're gathering Helium network tokens based on the activity of your antenna. And those tokens are tradable on the exchanges, and so, they go up and down in value.
So it's your own personal one. So is it harvesting like your data or something?
I don't know.
How does that work? Like, I'm just thinking about what's the end use, or like, how is it being applied, I guess, like to get a token or to get paid for?
Well, it's just because I live in this certain area that has the amount of coverage for IoT devices. I'm helping to build the network and being paid for it, basically.
Mm-hmm. Your area would kill it, Nicole. I know. Have so many antennas around you.
Well, people are getting, that's why businesses and places are allowing like the 5G towers to go up on their buildings, because they're getting paid a lot just to have it in that section. So I've heard like churches and stuff, like, for example, sometimes they're getting more just by having like that 5G tower on top of their building than they are from like their actual congregation.
That's terrible.
Yeah. But I wonder how that.
Wait, they're getting more money by having the 5G tower than like their congregation. Mm-hmm. Wow. So they're like selling out their congregation in a sense. Right? Kind of.
Yes.
It's just another income stream, like,
right. But now you're under like so much like EMF frequency. Ugh.
Maybe they could just, I've heard shungite is a really great blocker as a crystal.
Mm-hmm. That church is going to need a lot of shungite.
but back to this, because like I'm not as familiar with it. So it's like a new, so it's new. So like, what is the, it's helping build the Internet of Things. So like, how is it different than 5G, I guess?
Well, it's, I don't know. It's not as big of an antenna. Okay. I think it's just like, cause AM radio as a radio frequency actually goes very long, I'm not saying it's an AM frequency, but like, it doesn't have to be very powerful to travel a long way, I looked up the network coverage in DC recently, and there's a ton of antennas, and that's actually a problem because you want to have fewer antennas. Actually, like, the better thing is to be in a suburban, like rural area almost, because the coverage is big enough. You're the only hotspot out there. You get more activity.
Mm-hmm. But, right, because like more people would want to link up to it.
Yeah. I mean, like, no one links up to it. Like, it's like the fridges and the washers and dryers and like those things that need internet connection, but not a lot, to like just communicate with servers and things. Mm. It's like those types of things that need it. It's not like I'm providing a Wi-Fi hotspot for other apartments.
Got it.
But yeah, the idea, the model itself of, we're going to pay you for helping out this network and then building coverage, and you get money for however much you generate, and that's not a new concept, but it's not applied enough to things that we do. It's really great. Like, you could totally do a solar token and like put solar panels on a roof, and it would mine solar tokens as it generated power for your house. We could be monetizing things in a digital way, way more in our daily lives. Mm-hmm. But again, it runs up against entrenched power structures. Mm-hmm. And this is their tool of power and control. Do we want to give people that ability to make money willy-nilly?
The answer is no.
Unless there it like benefits the system in a way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So really I feel like we have this window of time, mm-hmm. like this opportunity that either you take the opportunity and you learn and you adapt and you figure these things out and you ape in, for instance, like you just get in, you jump in, and that window of opportunity is going to be gone.
Yeah.
And then the forces of power are going to take this and utilize it for their benefit. That's kind of like where I think we're headed.
It's like a window of opportunity because like, the future is unknown at this point. Like, so we can like guess where it's going. But as far as like now is like the entry point and the exit point isn't really defined.
Mm-hmm. Or like you don't, I mean, we've had people on this podcast that say like they do not want to participate at all.
Right. Like they have like a moral dilemma where I think they see it as like, it's not a good thing overall for humanity. So it's like, I'd rather like, you know, like exercise my civil disobedience by like not participating in that structure, like going forward, like trying to fight against it almost.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like you could influence it in the ways that you want mm-hmm. if you jump in.
Mm-hmm. That's the whole thing. Like you have to understand it to really, you know, to really know enough about like where it could go or what the potential is or, you know, like how to actually help, I guess.
Yeah. You have to also be willing to listen to a lot of crypto bros on YouTube.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. And that's the thing, and this I do see a lot of minorities and people of color jumping in. Mm. But that's going to take a long time too. You know, there's a lot of like tech bros are obviously way into it and they're going to be whales, so to speak, in the beginning mm-hmm. parts. But, you know, again, like.
But you also have really smart kids, mm-hmm. really yeah. smart young kids that are making insane amounts of money mm-hmm. right now. They never have to go to college. Yeah. The whole pension, being stuck at a 9-to-5 corporate job until they retire is not going to even be a thought in their mind.
I know. No, I think that I love that. And I think that we're able to provide that for our kids, for the next generation. I also like think about this whole like 9-to-5 pension, Social Security thing is honestly like a complete blip in human history. You know, mm-hmm. it's the wide outlier of everything. And we think that we're in the middle of it right now, or we're coming out of it. So we think it's the normal, but it's not. A wild swing change like thing that happened luckily because of other factors outside of its control, you know, and then all of a sudden we grew up in a generation that's like, do this and go here and do that. And it's like, hold on. That was like a tiny blip of mm-hmm. what's supposed to happen. So like the future is wide open, you know, and it can't be sustainable what it is right now. Like this is all falling apart in front of us. I don't honestly believe that we're going to make it in this current structure in the next like 10 years, you know, right. I think there's going to be a completely different, and I think it's gonna be a completely different structure. And I think it's because of crypto where it's like, not so much the technology, but the just idea of what it entails. It's like, if we can just make value out of nothing and we can make whatever we want and just assign value to something and then make money off of it. And then it's like, everyone can be rich and then no one's rich. And it's like, well, why do we even need money? You know? And mm-hmm. I think that's something that I'm more interested in, like hope that happens in my lifetime.
Yeah. Like a way to live without having the pressure of money. Like, I guess having basic needs met and it's not tied to like your status or your occupation, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's taken me a couple months to really sink in the idea of how pervasive just money talk is everywhere, all the time, in mm-hmm. everything. And so just to think about the idea that it it is a story and it is something that we all agree on, but we don't have to agree on it. It's,
yeah,
like, it's like right. Sorry, go on.
Oh, no, go ahead.
No, it's just like right in front of our faces. So we spend all of our time looking past it. You know, it's like it's the most pervasive, ubiquitous story we have.
I think it comes down to like exchange. Mm-hmm. Like it's really, it's just like an exchange of energy with another person or another being. I mean, a dollar could be a pebble, and we're exchanging pebble for pebble. And now you have 100 pebbles and this person only has 5 pebbles, or like an exchange of like services. Like, mm-hmm. I'll give you 2 fish for like your loaf of bread. And
yeah, they're bartering.
Like bartering, mm-hmm. like, cause that's what we used to do before cash was a thing. We'd barter for, you know, you come do, I don't know, paint my house or whatever, and I create fishing poles for you. I don't know.
But what's like so sad is if we had to go back to bartering now, like
no one what, would be like, able would you to barter? Right, I'm going right. to barter my poli sci degree and you're going to.
Yeah. I'll take a latte.
In exchange for a, like what a psychology degree. Like what do we even barter? We don't have skills anymore. Mm-hmm.
Like practical skills.
Mm-hmm. We're just like wallets for mm-hmm. other people to take money out of.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So like so going into this new realm, it's like, I can see it as like the possibilities are endless.
It's up to our imagination, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think.
What do you hope for like the next, like that you want to see in your lifetime? And what the next 5 years do you think is going to bring?
Okay. Well, what I hope is we, you know, become Star Trek in the sense that in that show, in that world, they abolished money and they understood that everyone had some kind of gift to give the world, and they were able to share in a united mission of just like a humanitarian mission to explore space. And money was given up entirely. I think that's amazing. Because it is just a human invention. So that's what I hope happens in the next 5 years. You know, if we don't go to World War III, I mean, holy shit, but I don't know, I think the next 5 years, we're just going to continually see everything crumble until we do something about it. It's not going to be like, we're going to vote somebody in and it's going to fix it. We all know that's right. Bullshit.
Yeah. Like that, you know, system's like really failing too.
It's gone. Mm-hmm. It's done. You know, there's like, I don't know if you know Jessa Reed. She's a great other kind of accidental mystic, she calls herself. But she was like, you know, just channeling stuff for the last few years. And she was just kind of like, you know, the world is ash and we're all just pretending it's not ash. It's kind of how it feels right now. She's like, imagine when you watch a building be demolished, like you see the initial like flares of the explosions. And then for like a couple seconds, it just sits there and then it falls down. Like we're kind of there right now. We're like, the flashes have gone off and the building's just kind of sitting there. And the more like I think about that, it makes a lot more sense. Like, you know, we're just kind of play acting in this like world that we hope still exists and it doesn't.
We're kind of like pretending. Yeah, it's like we're pretending everything's okay. It's like there's this looming problem or like multitude of problems, and we're just like carrying on. I feel like, you know, it's just like I feel like it's so unnatural to be living this way. Like we just lived through, like we've been living through constant unprecedented times. And the fact that like we're still like mentally here, like we're still present, we're still able to have this conversation, go to work, like do all the things we still have to do while we're under like a nuclear threat. Like what the hell? Like if you thought about that 10 years ago, you know,
that's so true,
right? Like if you thought about that 10 years ago, like people would be freaking out. But somehow I feel like we've had to establish this baseline resiliency where it's like, this is just the reality at this point. Like, we don't know, like, if it will, we don't know what's real. We don't know what's, you know, like, it's almost like we're just kind of waiting for like the next shoe to drop constantly.
Yes. We've been in collective shock for so long. We just can't process anymore. Like, I'm trying to think of what was, well, like, Don't Look Up is like the perfect example, that movie.
I haven't seen it, but I keep hearing about it and I hear like it's so impactful. So
no, it's, I love it, but yeah, it's one of those things where like you're laughing at yourself actually crying because it's so true. But like, you know, I mean, basically the premise is it's like the movie Armageddon, but nobody cares. And like, just that sense that in the event of an existential crisis, like most people just dick around and fuck off and like don't care, you know? And that's kind of where we are right now. Like, because we're in such, we've been bombarded with so many things, we can't process it anymore. We know everything's bullshit. We're too scared to give it up. And it's okay. Like, it's nice, you know? It's really nice where we live right now. And it's not sustainable. And we also know that. So we're kind of in this like weird between stage, you know, like I lived where I live, the George Floyd protest happened right outside my door for like an entire month. And, of course you hear all the people talk about like the Fox News people be like, yeah, you know, they're just lazy because they don't have jobs. And it's like, no, what happened was you took them off the hamster wheel and then you gave them resources to like, to give them shelter and food and some support and no work. And they were able to take a breather and they got super pissed, you know, and the entire world blew up because we were forced to stop and look at everything. And that was like, that's what they're trying to stop us from doing all the time.
Right. So it's like the constant distraction thought, like the constant, like there needs to be an element of fear in order to like bring our capacity and potential down. Because it's like, if we're constantly concerned about something over here, it doesn't leave as much energy and time and effort that we could be putting into things that are outside of that level of fear. You know, like you don't operate at the same level if you're constantly taxed.
Exactly.
And the common denominator is money, I feel like, because that is what keeps people on the hamster wheel, because people have to go to work to pay the bills, to buy the car, to all of that. It's like ongoing. And so if you take us off the hamster wheel, it's like, wait, what is this even? What are we doing here?
Yes. And I just, you know, we're going to be presented with continual opportunities to tear it all down on our own, I think, until it falls in on itself. I think 2020 was that first kind of step, you know. But we're just like so overwhelmed and in shock consistently. We can't process what's happening. I see all these things and I know what's happening, and I still go and like do fire nights with my friends every Monday. Like,
do what? What,
yeah, just it? Like I do a fire night Monday. You know, like I go out, like I know all this shit and I still go out and operate inside of it. You know, it's just, it feels really, really hypocritical, but I'm so locked away from that feeling. It's like, yeah, I don't know. I'll get a beer, I guess.
Do you feel like that's being desensitized in a sense too? I mean, how much until it stops to... You know, back in the day when there was this one school shooting, it traumatized everybody. Now there's just, you know, so many of them. It's like, okay, it's just like another Tuesday. You just become so used to it.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what, I feel like a lot of this stuff they're just kind of messages for us as humans to look at and reflect on and change behaviors around. And if we don't do that, then they'll just keep getting louder and more until we do.
Yeah. So I guess since we're close to that time, to like close out in some of our final questions, one that we like to ask every now and then is, what is like one thing that you would like to leave the audience with, like any, like a parting thought, like a concept, kind of like, you know, it could be anything.
Just in your life on a daily basis, look at how much money is surrounded by it. And then think about the idea that it's a story that we created. It's a story like a superhero story or like the Bible or anything else. It's another story that we use that we've all created on our own. There's nothing tying it to actual value. We just all did that on our own.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
There's, I feel like everybody too has a story when it comes to money. It's so deeply rooted in all of us, like why people are so frugal or why people are so frivolous and like scarcity mindset. I mean, that just made me even like reevaluate like how deep it goes for me really. And like, how much is it rooted in fear?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
It's a dark hole.
It's
your personal value, basically. Mm. It's how you value yourself. And it shouldn't be that way. It's a bullshit story. We can choose to believe it or not. You should not have that power over us.
Totally agree. Okay, are you ready for our last question?
Hit me.
Okay. What is one song that penetrates your soul?
Oh, damn. I got a couple. Okay. Well, I'll do a couple. When I Was Done Dying. When I Was Done Dying by Dan Deacon.
Oh, so good. The music video.
Yes. Thank you.
So
yes.
Epic. Oh my gosh. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. It is so good. Okay.
And Ace of Cups by Ellis Dream.
Love that. Okay.
Have you heard that one too?
Yes.
I haven't, but I'm excited to hear both now.
I'm adding
So that song, he uses sound bites from a book, an audio book called from Barbara Marciniak. The book is called Bringers of the Dawn. And it was written in the 80s. She channeled it from Pleiadian, like emissaries of light, basically, that channeled it through her into that book. And then she had her voice reading it in the audio book. So this is like, if you listen to that song, it literally is a message from extraterrestrials to humanity in the way that it plays. I love it so much.
Can't wait to add those mm-hmm. to the playlist.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for coming on. For our listeners too, like, where can they find you?
Just rickplautz.com.
Okay. RICKPLAUTZ.com.
Yes, that's it.
Cool.
I have all my stuff on there.
And we'll also link it in the show notes as well.
Great.
Yeah.
Yes, please. I loved it so much. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on.
It was great. Okay.
Level complete. Hit subscribe, like, and leave a review for future simulations.